Hey, kids.
You're listening to the internet's wettest podcast about video games, consoles,
and pancakes.
The SML Podcast.
What's up, everybody? This is the SML Podcast. I am your host, Joe. Aki is here. Jacob's here. Chris is here. Purnell will be here later. Horror Acolyte will be here later. It is Tuesday night. We got reviews and fun shit like that. How is everybody doing?
According to this blurb you gave me, I am developed and published by Milestone.
You are. How's everyone else doing? Because Jacob's apparently really high.
I'm okay-ish.
Divorce, thank you for the sub. Appreciate you being here.
I'm Shadow Developed by Tosei. With a passable translation.
Passable, that it?
Yeah.
Cool.
I mean, yes.
Wait, it's a bad translation. Yes. Y-I-Y-I-S. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yes and yes. Hmm.
But how was everybody's weekend? What's everyone been up to?
I've been sick.
Still?
Yeah. My wife actually went to the doctor today, and they're like, yeah, you've got really bad bronchitis, and they actually, like, gave her medication, like, right there at the office, along with, like, four prescriptions.
Jeez.
Yeah. I'm nowhere near as bad as her, but, like, still, I had to take yesterday off from work.
Damn. I've now been you're slumming in on here.
Yeah, too bad I can't cough in Aki's mouth.
I mean, to be fair, you couldn't give me bronchitis anyways. I've eaten after people who had bronchitis and never got it.
Yeah, but not if I hawk a loogie in your mouth, which, by the way, is also plot of my next fan fiction about the SML podcast.
Yeah, please don't. Ugh, gross.
How he muted. I'm guessing he's coughing up a lung right now.
Good. He deserves it from what he just said.
Sorry, I had to expel liquids from my nose.
Ugh. Fun.
I've been dog sitting. Like,
why did I show up?
Oh, I'm like, why did I show up?
For the usual reasons, to review games.
Yeah, to talk about games. Is there anything anyone wants to talk about, or are we just really just immediately diving into reviews?
I mean, I didn't get to see, Mortal Kombat 2 this weekend, so...
No.
Well, yeah, man, I've been sick. Like, nobody's gonna want to sit in an IMAX theater with me being like...
I mean, no one wants to sit in a movie theater with a twat with their damn... taking a phone call, but that happens any fucking way. You could have done it any damn way. Who cares?
Yeah, but, like, I don't know. Like, I mean, first off, I don't want to go to a movie theater if I'm sick, but, like...
That's fair.
Like, fair.
I mean, that, but also, like, the time I accidentally turned a showing of Quantum of Solace into probably, like, a super spreader event. So, that was fun.
GG.
Yeah.
Also, GG's to retired USAF gamer who just subbed to us. Always appreciate you. Seventh month. Almost ready to have the babby.
The babby?
Is that akin to almost ready to smoke a fatty? I don't understand here.
Babby. Kid. Baby. How are babby formed?
Oh, yeah.
Okay, I thought you said baddie. Okay.
No, babby.
Yeah, babby.
Yeah.
Sorry, I'm barely paying attention. I'm barely functioning.
What video are you watching now?
More Among Us.
Is somebody watching a video?
I didn't finish that one. I still have like about 25 minutes left of it.
Aki's watching manga wrap up videos.
Because
she doesn't have anything else to do right now.
Hmm.
I don't. I'm not first.
True.
Bitch.
I mean, that could change easily.
Well, make it change then. I don't care. You don't say that care. Like that's a threat to me. Please. Unlike most of the people on here, I don't write notes. Everything I do comes from memory.
I think that is most of us.
Oh, I figured all y'all wrote notes because Bree did, and I assumed y'all were, you know.
No, Bree doesn't, or Acolyte does notes.
I was going to say, have you ever listened to like a Thursday show? No. It is very clear who takes notes and who does not.
True.
I don't know.
Should we see who took notes this week?
Sure. Okay.
Y'all I ready for reviews? Oh, what? What, Chris?
I said, well, I've either got a surprise or no surprise at all, because it wasn't me.
Me neither. Wait, I did. I actually wrote down a note, so I didn't forget. Jacob's hacking up a lung again.
Sorry, I forgot to take myself off mute.
Proud of you. So, everyone ready to just dive into reviews?
Sure.
Jacob, that's your cue.
Oh, yeah.
Fucking moron.
So, is this the part where I start reading?
No, this was the part where you were like, you were supposed to be like, well, that's up to you, Joe, because you're first. And I was going to be like, oh, yeah, that's right. And then you'll be like, first game to talk about is blah, blah, blah. But you're like,
I'll have what she's having.
Like, we discussed this literally 12 minutes ago.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, we did.
Okay.
So, y'all ready for reviews?
Sure.
Yarp.
May the force be with you.
God damn it, Jacob. Just read the fucking thing.
I don't know, Joe. It depends. You're going first.
I hate you so much sometimes.
MotoGP 26, developed and published by Milestone, released April 29th on Xbox, Play Anywhere, Switch 2, PS5, and PC for $59.99. Experience the full intensity of the 2026 MotoGP Championship with all the official riders, teams, bikes, and tracks in a more authentic way. For the first time, the real-world results dynamically update riders' ratings, directly influencing in-game performance throughout the season. Step into the spotlight and track your journey with dazzling collectible cards celebrating your progress.
So, Joe, what do you think about the game? Oh, thanks.
Okay. I thought, sorry. I was like, wait, is there more to this description?
Have you never heard me do an intro before?
It just ended kind of abruptly.
Yeah. You're like, supposed to like wing it and.
No, but improvise. I meant like, whatever.
Well, yeah.
Joe, tell us about this game.
MotoGP 26 is the newest in the line of the MotoGP series. If you've missed the first 25 entries, the story does not carry over, so you'll be all right. Standalone story. Now, for real, this is the latest in Milestone's MotoGP series. I have enjoyed this series for a good number of years and kind of took a few years off. Because it felt like the series was getting stale, and I came back to it this year, and it kind of surprised me in ways I wasn't sure. Let's go through the modes in the game. First off, there is the usual Grand Prix. You just, you know, race. They got the championship. You do a series of events, and the winner takes all. Time trials, self-explanatory tutorial, self-explanatory career. This is where the meat of the game is. You go through career mode, you join teams, you can decide on how to progress your team's direction in terms of steering and power and handling. You get to do interviews, which is an interesting twist where Depending on your answers, you can focus on being more of a rival or more of a balanced person. I've been kind of a dick to the other riders, so I've been doing rivalries. I've been picking on the one guy who usually comes in second. I forget his name. His first initial is a V. I remember that. He normally takes second, except when he's my rival. There's a couple of races he may have accidentally fallen off his bike. You know what I mean? Yeah. As you go through the career mode, you are occasionally thrown different race-off events. They have four different race-off modes that you could do. They have flat track racing, motard vehicles, mini bikes, and production bikes that depend on could change depending on what event you do. Those can boost your physical abilities, and they could boost your relationship with the riders that you pick to go against. The best thing about this game is the level of assists and customization that it throws at you in terms of difficulty and presentation. A lot of older Milestone games were kind of brutal with their difficulty, with their handling. They throw in a lot of assists in terms of acceleration assists, braking assists, handling assists. You are able to set the AI difficulty anywhere from 20 to 100. I started at 20 and I was just like wrecking everybody. So I kind of like shifted my way up. I figured I'd be comfortable racing at my age. So I'm racing at 45 and I'm still pretty much dominating really well, but that's how I like it. I want to win these things. I don't want to struggle, if you understand. They also have online, kind of self-explanatory. I got into a couple of games. It wasn't very well populated when I was racing. There is crossplay, so you can race against other platforms, which is good because I only ran into one other Xbox player through the night that I played.
Well, I mean, how long has the game been out, though?
I mean, like, you read just the description.
Yeah, and you know I don't listen.
2 weeks.
2 weeks, okay.
Yes. Yeah, April 29th it came out. So, okay. But I would hope that there was... I guess it doesn't help that I played later in the evening. I think I played at like 10 or 11, but you would think West Coast would still be
up. Yeah, but I mean, if this is
around the world.
I mean, if this is like a series that's more popular over in Europe than here, I mean, you might have had better luck if you were playing in the early evening.
I don't think the MotoGP series is more popular in Europe. This is very much an American thing, I believe. Or like worldwide, because you're racing all over the globe, but I don't know where it's most popular. That's a good question.
I mean, Milestone's Italy, so I figured.
Yeah.
You know.
And they are proving once again that they are the masters of racing games, because this is another very good one. As you go through, I want to jump back to career. As you go through races, you can earn cards. You can earn cards in all the modes, online, whatever else, but you earn the most through career. As you unlock the cards, you fill your little card folder. If you get duplicates, you earn points that you can spend towards new packs if you earn enough points. They range from just standard pictures to anime style illustrations. They have locations of the track locales. I ran into some issues though. I got to talk about the issues. First off is a big one that I just ran into today. I was in a race where it was shifting from cloudy to rainy. And when the first couple of raindrops hit, my entire screen was covered with rain. Like, it wasn't a drip here, a drip there. It was like
downpour.
You're driving in the rain and you don't have working wipers. Uh-oh. It was impossible to see.
That's odd.
Yeah. I don't know what the hell caused it. It went away after like 10, 15 seconds, but that was a rough 10, 15 seconds to race. Yeah, Joe doing reviews. What's the world come to? Yeah, I don't know what happened with that rain bug. It was very weird. I did report it to Milestone, so hopefully they could look into that. The other major issue I have is it doesn't seem to want to save my camera settings. It defaults you on close third-person view, and I want the far third-person view. Every race, I've had to go in at the start and change to third-person view, or third-person distant view.
Ew,
it seems like no matter what I do, every race I have to redo the camera settings, and if you do any of the fine-tuned settings, you have to redo them. It's kind of annoying, but no, it is what it is. Hopefully that's something that they could get a fix out for. I know they just had a patch out on Monday that addressed some issues. Overall, the game performs really well. It looks good. Smooth visuals. Even on my PC, it ran well. Which is another benefit with Xbox. It is a Play Anywhere title. So you get it on Series and PC, which is very handy when your wife wants to watch a lot of Netflix after work. Right, Jacob?
Okay. Totally.
Yeah. So, Jacob, do you have a question for me?
I mean, like, you had said that, like, this wasn't nearly as grindy and difficult as previous entries. I mean, like, is this like, a good jumping in point for new players, or like do you think like this is like still look elsewhere until you get better situated with it?
I think this is a great entrance point, mainly because of how good the assists are in this game. It's very easy to pick up and play. Once you get through the tutorial, you can fiddle with all the settings that you want. Even in the tutorial, it's very easy with the handling.
Yay!
They have BX Latino Heat, thank you for the sub. We are chatting about MotoGP 26 right now. 38th month sub. Wow, thank you. The assists make it very approachable. It is very easy for anyone to fire this up and
Yay!
Start racing. Burger Thing with the 25th month sub. Thank you, everyone. We got a hype train incoming. Holy crap. But yeah, I think this is a great starting point. Whether you are a veteran to the series, whether you're coming back after a few years, or whether this is your first go at $60, I think this is a worthwhile entry or returning point in the series. I have put about 8 to 10 hours in so far, and I have like 500 achievements.
Bits!
Latino okay. Heat with 100 biddies as well. Thank you very much. That's a lot of sound effects in this review. But yeah, overall, I would give this one a buy it. I am very happy with my time spent with this game, and I will be spending more time with it through the week up until Friday when Forza launches for premium.
That's pretty good.
Any other questions?
I didn't have any other questions. Aki, did you?
No, that would have required me paying attention. I was barely doing that. You know me.
Fair. Okay. Chris?
No, none for me, thanks.
Okay. Horror Acolyte?
I didn't hear enough of it. I just got here.
you're all terrible.
Yeah, pretty much. Jacob, you ready for yours?
Yeah, I am ready for mine.
All right, next game to talk about is Rival Stars Horse Racing, developed and published by Pickpock. Released April 28th, Xbox One, Series X and S, and PS5 for $29.99, coming soon to PS4 and Switch. Handed the keys to a rundown ranch, it's up to you to restore your family's legacy and become an equestrian legend. With the help of a host of colorful characters, you'll raise charming foals, manage your dream stable of horses, and bring the ranch back to its former glory. Jacob, I know you love your horsies. What's going on in Rival Stars Horse Racing?
So, Rival Stars Horse Racing, which, by the way, I didn't realize that Pickpock was... they also did Agent Intercept, which I reviewed many years ago. Well, actually. Okay, it's not really that many. It's only like four, but whatever. So anyways, so in Rival Stars, first off, I want to make it clear, this is very clearly a mobile game that got brought onto consoles. But what I do appreciate about this is that even though, like, you know, the GUI that, like, you know, you use to navigate through the menus and stuff like that, even though that's clearly, you know, it was clearly made for like a mobile phone or a tablet or something like that, there is an insane amount of depth to this game. And
before
to be
you get
honest,
into that, you know what?
Yeah.
Your face is GUI.
Well, yeah, I mean, I've been sick, so I've been blowing my nose a lot.
Ha ha, gotcha.
Ha ha. Anyway. So, there's a surprising amount of depth in this, and as longtime listeners of this podcast will know, pretty much I will review any game with horses in it. Like, it was initially done for shits and giggles, but also because my kids like horses and stuff, and so it's like, oh yeah, I'll get them, you know, whatever, and then they'll play it for like a day and then forget about it for the rest of their life. And a lot of those games are just very simple things where it's just like, here is your horse, here you can take care of it, here's your outfit that you can decide, and that's like all you do, and you just like run across like a predetermined area. Rival Stars, like, as I said, like, this thing is in depth. You are building your stables, you are building your estate. In fact, the whole storyline of this thing is that you're reestablishing your estate. Like, your grandfather was known as like a master equestrian and like raising all sorts of horses and winning all sorts of championships, and unfortunately, like, you know, your parents died when you were very young, and so it's fallen into disrepair, but, you know, one of the old servants, or helpers, you know, contacts you and asks you to come back, and, you know, I think that there's a lot of life left in this. So, you go about rebuilding your whole estate, and that includes, like, the horse stables, like, areas where foals can get born, and you can even, like, I guess, like, there's, like, houses on the thing that you're just able to rent out to people. And so that's good because, obviously, all of these races that you're going to enter into and all the facilities that you're going to build to train your horses and stuff like that, believe it or not, it costs money and supplies. And so...
No!
I know. It's true. It's capitalism. Hold up one second. I just got a cough. Okay. So anyway, so you're going to have to enter in a bunch of races, but the thing is that sometimes you're not going to do so hot, or like you overspent on training your horse. And so that's where like these, like you being like a landlord or something, comes into play. So it's just like, you might have to wait a while for this income to come in, but you know, eventually you'll have steady income with this. And as you're doing this, you're going to keep racing your horse. You're eventually going to start breeding it because you want longevity, and establishing your history of, like the estate and all the famous horses that you used to race and stuff like that. And so you get to choose who your horse is going to mate with. Like, do you just want to keep it purebreds? Do you care? Like, do you care if you're just mixing up stuff? Like, so you can get like the best stats for everything. Like, you, like, there's a lot of stuff to consider with this. And like, I'm not going to lie. Like, I like, Joe brought this to my attention because he was like, oh, well, you review all the horse things. And I'm like, ha, this is going to be dumb. And I'm just going to, like, you know, like, it's just going to be yet another horse game that, like, is.
I like how your first impression is this is going to be dumb. And my first impression is, hey, Jacob might enjoy this.
I mean, those often are one and the same.
Yeah, I mean, it's true. And so what also I thought was really cool is that, guess what? you have to do all the competitions too. And so it's not like you're just like leveling up your horses like, oh, they won, where it's all like random luck. Like, you have to like start training your horses for speed and endurance and like all this other kind of stuff. And then you have to like start planning how they're going to like, how you're going to build up your horses. I guess it's like boost. If you want to like use video game terms for it, it's essentially like a boost that you can use at any point during the race, but of course it's going to become more, prominent during that final stretch in the lap. But, you also have to consider like where your horse prefers to be within the race. Do they want to be ahead of everyone? Like, do they like hanging towards the back and then just having like a strong finish? Do they like being in the middle of the pack?
They like not being at the glue factory.
Which, funny you should mention that. That's actually the name of my horse ranch. I called it the glue factory.
What were the other names we settled on?
Oh, God. I don't remember what I named my horse. Oh, we had to go with the, we couldn't come up with anything because, I wanted to make it so, the announcer would actually say what it is. It's like, so you can put pretty much anything in there, but the announcer has like pre-recorded words, for that. And so, are you able to scroll quick enough, Joe, or no?
No, I think the...
Oh,
the
Basic Tree.
Basic Tree.
Basic Tree is the name of my horse, and I forget the jockey, what the...
Fart Waffle McGee?
Yes, that's the name of my jockey, and I forget what the name of my foal is, but yeah, like, and of course, like, as you're going through this, you're only going to have access to so many materials, so it's going to behoove you to start hooves. it's going to behoove you to, like, start raising other horses and, like, start training that foal, like, to enter in their own races and stuff like that. And so, eventually, you can also buy, like, accessories for, like, how you want your horse to look and stuff like that, which... mostly are cosmetic as far as I could tell, but like, I mean, you could tell that this was probably microtransaction to hell back on mobile, but thankfully on console, it seems like it's all there. And I was like, I'm not gonna lie. Like, I'm impressed with this game.
I would imagine it's a good
management. Like, I mean, it's a decent management sim mixed in with actual like horse racing, and it's not just like, oh, well, can you have the horse go across the meadow? Yay. Like, there is free roam in this, and there is also stuff other than races. Like, there's steeple jumping and stuff. Like, there's, I mean, as I said, there's a free roam. Like, so there's
an actual game to this.
Yes, like, that's what I'm saying. Like, there is a legitimate game in here. Like, surprisingly.
Also has online multiplayer,
which I didn't get to, unfortunately. I don't know if I just missed it on the menu, or you have to get to a certain level before it'll let you on online. But yeah, I mean, like, this game's been going for like a solid like 6+ years on PC and mobile, so it's like, yeah, it makes sense that this got brought to consoles. And honest, this is probably like the most solid horse racing game, like just horse game period, that I've ever played on Xbox.
I wonder how the pricing is going to pan out with this in terms of popularity. I would imagine on mobile, it might be a free-to-play game with microtransactions.
Yeah, that's what I figure. Xbox
and PS5, it clocks in at $30. What are your thoughts?
I mean, I'm pretty sure that's less than, like, most of the horse, like, games that we play. I mean, I like how I said we, as if I'm, like, anybody else plays them. Because I'm like, what was Barbie Horse Trails on?
Is that 360?
No, that's the one that Outright.
Oh, that was the Outright one.
Yeah, all right. So 40. Barbie Horse Trails is actually $30 as well right now. I mean, I don't know if it's on. Oh, it is on sale. That's why.
I'm guessing so normally it's 40 normal price.
Yeah. Yeah, this is an actual game for horse enthusiasts. So, like, forget Barbie Horse Trails. You know, forget, like, My Princess Unicorn or whatever the heck it was, Unicorn Princess that we used to play. God, I can't, like...
The magic just, question, how does it compare to My Horse and Me Too?
Honestly, this blows it way out of the water. Now, My Suck Horse and Me Too... Now, My Horse and Me Too is obviously going to get you more resale value if you have it for the Xbox, but, you know... For those Jones and for that horse racing adventure, this one's honestly like this one you should definitely buy. Like, if anything, like even like so, if you're not into like this kind of stuff, wait for a sale. I don't know Makes how sense. Often Pickpock stuff goes on sale, but honestly, like this is a really solid game. It really surprised me, and I think people should check it out.
Very cool. Carnage was mentioning that some of the team, or perhaps all of the team that worked on this, also worked on Grip Shift for the 360, which is backward compatible and still buyable.
Oh,
so that's cool. There's another one to look into.
Oh, by different
studio name, but I think Carnage says it's the same crew. So.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. All right, well, Jacob, that is it for you. Appreciate you coming on, knocking out the horse racing.
Yay.
And fumbling repeatedly at my intro.
Whatever. I don't know what you're talking about. I did great.
Bree's better.
Well, yeah, that yeah. goes without saying.
She's better at everything. I mean, she's a good person. We're not.
Yeah, it's true.
You have any final words?
God, no. I'm just going to go to bed.
Yay!
Yay! Bedtime.
Next game, Pre-Simulator Vampire Show, developed by Asmodev and Ultimate Games, published by Ultimate Games, released May 7th on Xbox Series X and S for $19.99. Pre-Simulator is an action mockumentary with a completely messed up story that will introduce you to the fantastic world of modern Poland. Put yourself in the cassock of a vampire priest who wants to get his batoon back and return to hell. To that end, you must fight shantastic hordes, beef up, renovate the church, and gather splendor. Shout out to Ultimate Games, who hooked us up with a couple extra giveaway copies of this game. So make sure that you are hanging out in chat. Type exclamation enter for your shot at a copy. We'll be giving them away through the night and through the music. Oh, Acolyte, tell us what is going on in Pre-Simulator Vampire Show.
So, I'm not sure exactly what genre to call this game. It's kind of like a first-person brawler, maybe slight FPS because there's projectile weapons, but we'll say brawler. Mockumentary, like semi-sandbox or open-world game in a way. You play as Orlok, a vampire influencer in Hell, trying to rise in the ranks of the Infernet, Hell's Internet. By performing performing whatever antics get you the most views. To try and gain some rank, he decides to attack a lead influencer in Hell named Babak at this concert he's hosting. After defeating Babak, you take this elevator that somehow transports you to Earth along with your girlfriend or lady friend Vamila. Unfortunately for Orlok, he's transported to this church in a small Polish town that has this new priest, Torpedo, who has been reassigned to it. Torpedo decides to perform an exorcism on Orlok, removing his vampire powers. He promises to give them back, though, if Orlok does what he says. So I should probably preface this by saying this game is full of the most absurd humor that I've seen in a game, or some of the most absurd humor.
And so.
Yeah, not just in the content necessarily, but also in like how it's presented in a way. The character models in this game look like articulated mannequins, like or wooden dolls. usually with awkward features like bulging eyes or like strange, somewhat strange outfits, like the blackmailing priest Torpedo, who looks like he's wearing this dinosaur-shaped mask. And the cutscenes play out like an older reality TV show, camera shots zooming in and out on occasion, all the viewpoints during the cutscenes coming from the individual filming. Character dialogue is quite rigid, but the lack of nuance to the delivery adds to the humor of the game. There's also subtitles for all the dialogue, and some of the time, though, it'll just, like, skip over dialogue completely, like, even significant portions, like a full sentence. That doesn't happen, like, not to that degree too often, but a few times. Even though the priest took away your powers, he also blessed you, allowing you to be immune to some vampire weaknesses, like being able to be on hollow ground or performing chores like building crosses. After you perform the tasks he asked of you, there's a bit of a hiccup in his plans to restore your full power. Apparently the level of faith in the area is too low, so you must help him restore people's faith in Christianism. So you don some priestly robes and let the healing begin. The game consists of performing various odd jobs around the village, completing quests for specific tasks to increase the level of Christianism in the village, as well as I don't know if I wrote this down wrong in my notes, but as well as increasing your splendor, which I think was the game's name for experience. I might be mixing that up with another.
No, it's splendor. Term, though the game says to gather splendor.
Okay, so yeah, that. Yeah, I think that was the term they used for experience. And then when you get enough splendor, you level up one of your attributes. I don't want to really talk about those too much because, honestly, I thought they were mostly unimportant. your character never once felt like the attributes mattered, at least to me. Well, I at least not so far anyways. I haven't quite beaten the game. Sometimes your quests will include combat. Combat consists of a dual-wield system. It starts out with just your fists and the ability to hold melee weapons such as baseball bats or hammers. Your fists can be upgraded to include blades or limited charge shotgun blasts. That's kind of where the projectiles come in, or even the ability to use telekinesis. If you feel a little outnumbered, you can also recruit a handful of followers to your aid in combat. Not super useful, but good meat shields. You'll fight a number of enemies, mobs of, I think they were called Shaitanists, unless I wrote down one extra letter there. Cultists sporting casual attire like trat suits or camo pants with a signature red devil mask. A bunch of them wielding melee weapons like pitchforks or bats, some with shotguns that throw, and others that have melee weapons that throw kind of fire or like red lightning. There's larger skeleton enemies wearing crowns and sporting a moderately sized hammer. Some of your rivals from the underworld will make their way to the mortal realm to give you some grief, and try to send them straight back to hell. As you progress through the game, yeah, more of your rivals from the underworld will try to make their way to the town to kind of hinder your plans, I guess, to get your powers back. And most of the time, you're just doing these odd jobs around the village, like performing exorcisms. You can do confessions, which kind of take the form of like these mini games. Nothing too advanced. It's more of this like a novelty-based mini game. And other than that, it's mostly just a series of like fetch quests and like seeking out collectibles throughout the town, and then gaining XP. And then the only other major thing you have to do is, you can break down objects in the game that like give you resources to help renovate the church, because it's in the kind of like essentially demolished state, and you can restore it to its former glory, which gives a few superficial features to it. I think there's a couple utilitarian features, nothing really too crazy. But yeah, this I think this game, it falls under a category of games where it's not super terrible, but like it's kind of so janky and awkward that it is kind of fun. But I think a lot of the enjoyment in this is going to hinge on whether or not you resonate with its particular brand of humor. And most of that comes in the form of the cutscenes. So whether you appreciate the silliness of the silliness of the dialogue delivery, and if you don't enjoy that, the combat in this is mediocre, I would say, for the most part. it gets kind of tedious. The AI in the game isn't the best. And it's, I mean, if you just want to mindlessly beat things, it's, I guess, somewhat enjoyable, but like not enough so that it's going to last you that long in terms of the enjoyment level. So yeah, you definitely want to play this for hearing the silliness of the story, which there's a fair amount of cutscenes in this. Like you get one every, pretty much every quest. So, and there's a fair amount of quests, but, yeah, overall I'm having a fun time with it, so far, but, yeah, like I said, the humor is going to be the turning point for a lot of people.
That makes sense. It clocks in at $20. What are your thoughts?
I'd give it a try. It leaning more towards like waiting for a sale on this one, and definitely you're going to want to watch a trailer, and you might be able to tell from the trailer, or maybe watch like a little bit of gameplay and decide like whether the humor is right for you. Cause yeah, that's going to be the selling point for this one. In my opinion, you'll be able to tell right away if it's going to be something
you can
enjoy.
Watch you stream it, right?
I don't know about that.
But you know what they can do? They can
try win
it.
A copy.
Yeah, oh, should we give a copy away?
Yeah, that sounds like a plan.
All right, let's do this. Let's give away our first copy of the night. Giveaway draw. Congrats to Sir Khaled gets the first copy of the night. We will get you the key momentarily. Horror, do you have anything else to say about the game?
I don't play a lot of games that are kind of so janky that they're enjoyable, but it is nice to try this one out. And it is, like I said, I've been enjoying it. So, but it's not for everybody, that's for sure.
Yeah. All right, that is it for you. I know you had yourself a busy day. Were you going to stick around or did you want to head out?
Unfortunately, I need to head out. I need to like do some after get home kind
and
of
rest.
Things. Yeah, it's been a day. That's for sure.
All right. Well, yeah. We will let you get going and you have yourself a good one.
Thank you, sir.
Any final words?
Oh, let the sinning begin.
All right, let's move on. Next game is Axe Cop, developed by Red Triangle Games, published by Electric Airship. It released May 4th, Xbox One, Series X and S, Switch 1 and 2, PS4, PS5, $9.99. Play as Axe Cop and his team in this classic retro RPG. Take on challenging missions against his most devious enemies, such as Bad Santa Claus, Dr. Stinky Head, Dr. Doodoo, and more. The Axe Cop game is great for casual and hardcore RPG gamers alike, offering plenty of strategy, quests, and story for any gamer to sink their axe into. Chris, tell us about your time with Axe Cop.
All right, well, wait a minute. Can you hear me? Okay,
yes.
Yeah. I unmuted. Yeah, so Axe Cop. How many people remember Axe Cop? Yeah, I do too. I actually got in on Axe Cop pretty early, back when it was like just the webcomic. I'd say probably, you know, 2010, I think. It's about time I got into it. I mean, it came out in 2009 originally. Well, for those who don't know what Axe Cop was, it was a it was kind of like the pinnacle of the aughts lol random style of humor that I usually found very taxing. It was not my style of thing. However, the conceit of Axe Cop is that it was a web comic that was written by a literal 5-year-old, a kid called Malachi Nicole, who was 5 when in 2009 when the thing began, and then his older brother Ethan, who is age 28, would basically take his ideas and his writing and then turn them into a webcomic. So the webcomic was very, as you would expect, like frantic and random and things like that, and very violent, because like the titular Axe Cop, which you know, I distrust any 5-year-old that thinks cops are cool, but you know, it's Yeah, yeah. An axe cop is no exception. All cops, axe cops.
I'm glad it's getting warmer because, you know, the winter, just fuck ice. It gets really slippery. Yeah.
Yeah, I know. Plus the Department of Homeland Security.
That's why you need to stomp on them especially. Ice. That way it breaks and you can walk just fine without slipping on the shit.
Yeah, yeah. So anyways, yeah, so Axe Cop, his whole thing is, his catchphrase is, "I will chop your head off," because he is a cop who found an axe one day and decided that he is Axe Cop. And the game starts off with the same storyline. Now, the comic was pretty cool, and they like turned a show out. They turned it into a show at some point, and like it had its like time in the sun. I think it isn't really around anymore, probably because like the kid is 22 years old now. in case that's old enough to properly write things. But that's kind of like the odd thing here is that so this is a video game adaptation mostly. As I understand of the webcomic, I didn't watch the show, so I don't know. If it's exactly like the show, then, come at me, bro.
Bree wants to know if he has an axe to grind.
Yes, he does. He does have an axe. I don't know if you can grind it, though, but the metaphorical grinding is definitely there. Because, as soon as you start the game, basically, you start off in the police station, which is like your central hub, and then you ride by Rocket T-Rex to different worlds to kill everything in them and then defeat the boss. And that's your first world is like the prehistoric world, and like among the the first lines of dialogue is Axe Cop saying that he's going to make the dinosaurs extinct again. and as you go through and, defeat the enemies, then he does chop their heads off and puts them on a spike and then puts a bomb inside the dinosaur to warn other dinosaurs away. I don't think there's a way you can actually detonate this bomb. I believe that's just flavor text. But it is funny. Basically, like I said, this is an 8-bit style RPG, a turn-based one. It's very much like a Game Boy Color RPG. Like people say NES, but no, it's Game Boy Color. the palettes, the music, it all sounds like GBC style. Like I said, you run around these worlds that get, increasingly ridiculous. Dinosaurs is just the beginning. Like, okay, I'll give you an example. This is pretty early in the game, so not spoilers. I don't want to give away anything about, the later parts of the game, because, like I said, it's, that's the whole, I'll get to this, but it's like the whole thrill of it is not knowing what's going to happen next. But yeah, the first, the opening of the game, at some point, Axe Cop just randomly says, "I need a partner." And then, another cop shows up and he's like, "I'll be your partner." He's like basically saying, "I'll be your partner. I'm Flute Cop." And, indeed, Flute Cop is introduced very early on in the comic as well. And, it, as expected, he is a cop. He kind of looks like a commissioner and, he plays the flute. You do need the flute as like your way to get through these environmental puzzles that are a little simple. You just play the flute in front of a few statues and like stairways appear, and then you go up them and into the next area. And but after you defeat the first boss and Axe Cop chops its head off, of course it is a dinosaur, its blood gets on Flute Cop, and when Flute Cop gets hit with the blood of something, apparently it turns him into something else. And just like in the comic, he goes from being Flute Cop to Dinosaur Soldier, and he's a dinosaur with sunglasses still, because he's a cop. And then very quickly he becomes an avocado. He becomes Avocado Soldier. And you know, things like that. I don't know if he spends the rest of the game like that, but yeah, the character actually does change throughout the game.
Is this like eating the meat in Final Fantasy Legends too?
Yeah, it's something like that.
What you are every time.
Except it's story based, and you know, like I said, I think the narrative like kind of changes that. And you know, you also, you know, meet a cool dog also with sunglasses, a ninja, you know. There's all the things that a 5-year-old would write. And then, like I said, you just go from area to area doing Axe Cop things until you win. There's a long list of characters from the comic. I don't know if they all appear here because I did not complete this game, but, you know, there's a lot of, like, very silly characters in this video game. Lots of cutscenes that you'll enjoy. On top of the turn-based fights, there are like kind of minigame-esque parts of the stages. In the snow planet, for instance, you do have a snowboarding minigame, which is actually pretty cool. And so, yeah, that's like the cool stuff. The music is really, really good. I really enjoy the music to it. On it, and like I said, the main thrill of it is going around and meeting these characters and seeing these insane story twists that, you know, even for a 5-year-old, I don't think I could have come up with anything that good. And so that kind of gets me into like the parts of the game that are a little more unusual or like a little weirder to me. For one, the game's like featuring an all-new story written by a literal 5-year-old. And I'm like, well, okay, but this game first came out on Steam in 2020. So did the kid write the video game in 2009 when he was 5 years old? Or, you know, like, it's kind of adapted from the comics and, like, stories that already appear. It's like, I don't understand. I get the gimmick of it that, you know, a 5-year-old originally wrote the story and the characters and stuff, and somebody else drew them. But somebody else made this video game, so, like, that's half of the gimmick kind of not there. And then, like, yeah, I'm just like, who actually wrote this thing? It's it's confusing the way that they present it. They're like, hey, and here in 2020 and 2026 is a video game written by a literal 5-year-old, and like, it's in the game's title and everything, and like the intro sequence like shows the kid, you know, of course 8-bit style, but yeah. But still,
it
you know,
because it, the store page says it's inspired by the full run of the comic.
Yeah,
so it might be because the kid helped create the entire comic there, and it was adapted to the game. They're just it's eye catching to hear that a 5-year-old created the game.
Yeah, and it like I would get that if it was presented like that, but it's like at some place I read it was like, you know, all, you know, featuring a story, you know, all new story or something. Like, it was like confusing anyway. Like, I know what the real thing is. It's, you know, people who write video games adapted a comic into a video game. How much input the brothers had, I don't know, but, yeah. You know, it's based on their story and design. So, you know, that's good enough. Anyway, the other thing about this game, if you are wanting to get into it, it's a fine RPG. You know, the RPG elements to it can be a little bit like, oh, we're doing this, like, because, you know, everybody's got a basic attack. You know, all the enemies are on the map, and like the first stage, so it's like it starts off like, okay, this is kind of insane stuff, fine, let's go to the dinosaur planet, let's see what kind of crazy stuff happens here. Well, the crazy stuff that happens here is that you have to defeat 18 dinosaurs, and just find them all across this world, and, you know, play flutes in front of like statues and stuff for like however long it takes for you to get through the environmental puzzles, and then you fight another dinosaur. It's like this, you know, it feels notably not insane. It's just like, oh, okay, so they started you off with like this crazy premise, and then they're like, okay, now go fight exactly 18 dinosaurs, and, you know, that's how many there are there. You know, once it gets past that point, it's like then the random like crazy stuff starts happening more, and like you can, you know, the game kind of unfolds a little bit better. But I will say it's a little bit of a slow starter if you're expecting like the complete insane randomness like from the jump. So that's just a letting new players know about that. But yeah, it was really cool. And like I said, I love absurdism, you know, Dadaism, like all that, all the isms like that. It's, you know, I'm not a big fan of the lol random thing, but like there's a little bit more, like I said, this one is a little bit that, you know, it's that done as right as it can be done. Let's call it that. So, you know, Axe Cop has charmed a generation of millennials, and you know, this game does provide that. So I'm pretty happy about that, especially for the low cost.
Yeah, let's talk about the cost. It's $10. What do you think of it?
Yeah, I mean, $10 is actually kind of a fuck it, why not, in terms of having a full length RPG. You know, you do get multiple characters. You get lots to do. Even if it's, like I said, it's a little bit basic in terms of the actual gameplay, there are like a lot of things that, you know, kind of shake it up. And like I said, you are definitely going to want to play it to see what happens next. Because, yeah, that's kind of the big draw of it. So, yeah, to buy it, you know, $10, why not?
Very good. All right, and that is it for you, just as Purnell's coming in. Were you going to stick around, or did you want to head out and enjoy the rest of your evening?
I got to head out. Not going to enjoy my evening. My knee is messed up.
Oh, no, what happened?
Nothing, just being old, having tendons that are breaking down.
That's fair. My tailbone has been, like, aching like a mother lately, and I don't know why.
Yeah, so, you know, I'll be playing video games and stuff and keeping my mind off that and then going to work, which I probably should not do. And, but yeah, this is a fun time.
What games are on tap for the night?
What?
What games are on tap for the night?
Probably back to Dragon Quest IX, still working on that, you know, trying to get all that endgame stuff done. And, you know, I still got that Dragon Quest VII remake. I'm excited about the Star Fox game too, so hoping to get that, you know, whenever it comes out.
Yeah, it looked great. Very excited about that one.
It's very pretty, and you know, I don't get tired of playing that game and, you know, that style of game.
All right, well, we will let you get going. Do you have any final words?
That's it. Take care of your knees, folks.
That is good advice.
Yeah.
For now, how are your knees?
They were born bad, so I'm doing as best as I can with them.
That's a little bit my story too. It's like, it's not just being old. I've always had like kind of bad knees.
Yeah, and it freaking blows. People who weren't born with bad knees really tend to take them for granted.
Yeah.
But that said, I still exercise and stuff, try my best. So I'm all hanging in there.
Right on. Yeah, I'm definitely going to ride my bike because that kind of helped last time this sort of thing happened. It was, you know, because it's low impact, but it strengthens the muscle groups so that the tendons are, I guess, more supported.
Yeah, that's what I'm trying to figure out myself. Like, what is the actual trick to that, per se? But most of the exercise that you would do seem to be, like, things that actually are bad for the knees. Like, but I got to strengthen my legs somehow, right? What do you do?
Yeah, I hear swimming is great and bicycling is fine, too. So, but
on a bicycle for tall people.
I need to use our stationary bike more.
For sure.
Down to 290.
That's very good. I mean, you weigh less than I do.
That's I never thought I would. Oh, crazy. Just mind.
Great job.
Thank you, Joe Zempic.
Right on,
Joe Zempic.
All right. Well, have a good night, y'all. See you later.
Catch you later, good sir.
Bye-bye.
Laters. All right. Purnell, how was board game night?
It was fun. It was our 1-year anniversary. People came out. I spent a lot of money.
It's been a year already?
Yeah, don't remind me. I had plans this year, and none of them happened. So, yeah. But it's good that people come out. They enjoy themselves. People make a lot of friends there. So it's just doing its job. If it's too late for me, I can make it other people's dreams come true. And that's the whole point of it. So,
well, we are just partway into reviews. We're going to keep chugging on. Everyone ready?
Sure.
Aki, you ready?
Yeah, sure.
Okay, I don't know if you're still zoned out or not.
Oh, I'm always zoned out.
Good. Next up, Industria 2, developed by Bleak Mill, published by Head Up, released April 29th on Steam for $24.99. Industria 2 is a narrative first-person adventure about a woman stranded in a parallel dimension. Explore, scavenge, and fight your way through a mysterious boreal landscape consumed by an ever-hungry artificial intelligence to find a way home. Aki, what is Industria 2?
Okay, in Industria 2, you're playing as Nora, who was introduced in the first game, but I don't believe you played as her in the first game. She's actually originally went and used this super AI that was basically used to find different dimensions after they built this weird portal. And because they wanted a place basically to get information, to learn everything they could, because knowledge is power, I guess, I don't know. And her partner went into the machine one day and just vanished. And I believe in the first game, you're playing as him after he goes in. But she goes in following him to try and find him because she's like, where the hell did he go? What am I supposed to do? I need to go get him. And it continues the story of her being in this land now trying to get back because, spoilers, I guess. She finds his corpse at the end of the first game and is like, okay, it's... let's bury him, and I guess it's time for me to get the fuck back home. The problem is, the AI has gone completely rogue and has somehow gained the ability to create things in these other realms. So it's creating giant, basically, AI farms for itself so it can get stronger and smarter. And then it's also building all sorts of machines to go kill the shit out of all the people. Because... story reasons. it needs a plot, so it's killing people. Fair, you know. If I was a machine, I'd probably do it too, to be fair. You know, Skynet had good reasons. The first game is mostly just Nora and I believe it's William against the machines, not really against people too often. Like, they deal politically more or less with people. But in this game, it ends up being Nora versus machines for a little bit. And then she finds some people who are from her original world, and she's like, oh yay, we can finally get the fuck out of here. And then, you know, it, you know, the military being the military, they're fucking jackasses and can't just write shit off when they're like, we can use something as a weapon, possibly, maybe, so we're going to just stick our dick all over this. So they betray Nora, and then it becomes a lot of Nora killing the shit out of little assholes that call themselves soldiers, because this scientist is better at everything. Just everything. So this ends up being a first-person shooter and puzzle-y game. Often you're trying to figure out how to get to new areas. Sometimes it's through simple puzzles like, oh, push these buttons to raise areas and figure out which ones get you to the area you need to go, which are very simple because it's like three buttons and three pillars you need to raise. Woo! Other times you're finding items, usually by taking them off the corpses of enemies that you need to put in another machine to get it to activate so you can open a pathway. And the rest of it is, hey, you see that thing moving over there? Make it not move anymore with as many bullets as you need. And then you go and do it, and it's great. You do get a handful of weapons in this, from pistols to shotguns, etc., etc. Every one of the robotic enemies is different, which is kind of nice. And you start off in this game with a pretty OP melee weapon, at least for the beginning of the game, because it kills the shit out of enemies pretty quickly. And I'm just like, man, why couldn't I have had this in the first game? This thing's amazing. You basically get like this makeshift little pickaxe-like thing, and it's like just a chunk of sharpened metal that's been stabbed through a chunk of wood. Like, the wood is split even. Like, it is not made for this at all. And it's amazing. She's just going out, just beating the shit out of things and shooting things. And it's great. It is a pretty fun game. I did not actually get to the end of it. I got through, I think, about halfway, maybe a little further. And it's pretty good. I really like how the character interacts with other people. You can even interact with some of the people from the prior game. But it's not like, oh, you find them in the world. Instead, they're communicating through radios that you can find occasionally in levels. And that it just adds a little bit more like, this is just something nice. A nice little callback. It feels good. And yeah. Any questions?
I am hearing and reading a lot that it is very buggy.
I did not experience any major bugs myself. I did have a few times where the game crashed on me, which is kind of weird for a Steam game at this point in my life to crash on me with this computer. But other than that, it's worked pretty good. Its checkpoints are kind of not always great, though. I can't count the amount of times where, especially in the section that I'm in the game, where I'd get pretty far into it, like 20, 30 minutes, and then die and go, oh, I'm back at the start. Oh, that's fun.
Yeah.
Usually, up until that point, the checkpoints were a lot more manageable, but that the area where I am, it could really stand to use more checkpoints, but it is what it is. I'll figure it out.
Just looking on Steam, seeing a lot of people mentioning like graphical bugs and like audio dropouts and weird stuff like that. So
hopefully, I haven't noticed any graphical bugs, but I am also blind as a fucking bat. So
true.
I think I have seen some audio dropouts. I think I've had that a couple times, but they weren't anything super major, so I just kind of ignored it.
All right, well, it's $24.99. What do you think?
I am 100% for this. This is a great game. I think, realistically, you probably want to start with the first game to really understand it, because this is literally a continuation from the first game, like, just a couple months after the first game ends. And I think both of these are well worth buying. In Industria 2 is only on Steam, whereas the first game, I think, is on Xbox, Steam, and I think PlayStation, but I'm not sure if it's on PlayStation or not. I think it's worth getting, for sure, and you should probably get the first game, too.
Looks like the first game is, like, 90% off on Steam right now, too. So.
Yeah, I was about to say that, because I'm adding it to my cart right now, and I'm buying it, even though I have it on Xbox.
There you go, $1.99.
Yeah, it's great.
All right, let's move on. Clockwork Ambrosia, developed by RealmSoft, published by Oi Games, released May 12th on Steam for $19.99. Clockwork Ambrosia is a steampunk fusion of Metroidvania and weapon-building 2D shooter. Players pull on the boots of an airship pilot to combat an army of deadly robots and monsters, experiment with a range of rule-breaking weapon modifications and armors to prevail through this wild adventure. Purnell, Aki, both of you played this. Purnell, kick us off. What is Clockwork Ambrosia?
So it is a Metroidvania exploration game where you play as, like you mentioned before, an airship pilot who is on a trip and is shot down and forced to land on the island on which the game takes place, and unwittingly, as a result, gets drafted into a battle against rogue machines. So, with that description, there's nothing out of the ordinary. You've been there, done that. But the idea that what makes this particularly special are two particular elements that associate with it. The first, and the thing that they most likely did the majority of the marketing towards regarding this game, is the fact that you are tasked, not usually in most games like this, you get a bunch of weapons and then you pick between them at will based on the situation. However, in this game, you do not get a bunch of weapons. Instead, you get a couple of weapons, four to be exact. And those weapons, however, have multiple modification slots, typically five slots per, each slot representing a specific property of the weapon. And as you explore the game and open treasure chests and sometimes purchase from shops, you'll find modifications that can be associated with these components to modify the properties of the weapon you're firing.
Like, I'm for going example, to, you actually for a second.
Okay, go
I'm
for it.
A terrible person. They all start off with like five or six slots for different mods. You can find pieces in the world that upgrade them, giving them an extra slot each. And there are some that even give you two slots for specific items, even. But you have to search around for them.
And Aki loves her slots.
Oh yeah.
Oh, you have no idea how much.
I'm reading the store page. I like how they wrote this on the store page. Should you add a mod that powers up your bullets? Great, but it disables a round. Wait a minute. Let's add a mod that fires extra bullets when you disable a round. Oh, and now you're firing multiple bullets too, so you can use the mod that fires an extra bullet when you fire multiple. And that means... So this is just one small example of the thousands of unique builds players can craft through discovery and ingenuity.
Yeah, very much so. Because, like, the primary pistol you get at the beginning, I think for me, the standard shot at this point, I think fires six bullets every time I pull the trigger.
Oh, geez.
And then you can also charge it up to do a special attack. And I think that fires, like, eight bullets for me. So,
Arnell, what kind of cool builds do you have going on?
Nothing crazy. I'm just basically putting what I take on there and works. Like, I'm doing simple shit, like having a rocket that sometimes has, like, a short fuse or something. And then other times, I make it so that my gun auto-charges because I don't like holding down the button like in a Mega Man game. But in the end, I generally find myself in a situation where I get a set of stuff. I get a new mod part, and on one hand, it makes you feel like, oh, cool, I get to experiment with what this new part does. But a lot of times, you start to get familiar with how your weapon already functions. It better be a really cool part to make you want to swap it out for something new in that placement.
Yeah, and realistically, some of the mods aren't even that good. Like, There's some mods that are for some of the weapons that are like, oh, yeah. The weapon now shoots down, or it shoots up, or it just fires in a random fucking direction. It's like, that's not as useful. Because it doesn't, like, if you put the one that shoots up, it doesn't be like, oh yeah, now I'm aiming directly up and firing. No, the bullet curves upwards, or the rocket curves upwards, or whatever. And it makes it very hard to actually hit anything at that point. Because it's not like going diagonally. No, it's going at a curve, and it's like, shit. I fiddled around with that stuff a little bit, because I was like, oh, hopefully this will just shoot the thing directly above me, and it'll be great. And it did not do that, and I was very upset. Some of these mods are just bad. Just bad.
Yeah. It's almost like they kind of made it in a way where it's like they just wanted to make sure you had access to a bunch of different stuff so you have an opportunity to fill more treasure chests, which I'm not going to complain. Yep. I mean, I'm sure somebody might want to have a handicapped weapon that's not quite as cool as the original stuff, but it is what it is. Or maybe someone might see something that we didn't, and suddenly this thing that looks stupid to us might seem awesome to them. I don't know. But for what it is, the thing that does make it particularly cool is the level of customization these weapons have. I also do feel as though the maps are of a very generous size. So exploration is plentiful in this game. You might find yourself occasionally feeling like you're not quite getting the gist of what the game wants you to do to properly explore a section. Because there's a lot of winding that takes place. But with that said, that is not a bad thing by any means. The game is enjoyable to play and explore. Wasn't particularly concerned about the narrative that takes place in the game, but, meh, it's that kind of game. I mean, how often do I play a Metroidvania where I care about the overarching narrative? As long as the actual experience is cool, that's what I care about. And as far as I'm concerned, exploring this game and engaging with it is a good deal of fun.
And you're constantly unlocking different abilities for your character, too. And there's, like, a lot more than you'd think. It's not like, oh, here's a double jump, and now you can go underwater. And there you go. That's all you need. No, like, you get the ability to jump a lot higher with a jetpack. You do get the ability to breathe underwater. But then you also have things that are like, oh, yeah, here, when you jump against a wall, it'll make it take longer for you to start sliding down and take longer for you to slide down. That way you can more accurately pinpoint when you need to jump off and the like. And it's just little things like that that they keep adding to give you more ability just to do things. And they're even useful in combat because you can jump off the wall and shoot things and stuff. It's great.
And also, I forgot to mention also, I like the way that that armor is handled in this game too, in that you get a gauge that you can use to pretty much, it's like a gauge that charges up, and when it's filled up, there are armor slots that your different equipment will provide for you, which you can then use that full gauge for to repair and replenish. And that ends up representing the armor. Some equipment will actually give you perks that will engage with that too, such as giving you more armor slots or maybe changing and modifying how the repair gauge works, things like that. But it means that you don't necessarily just absorb hits and let it recharge. You basically have to know when's the right time to actively repair your equipment so that you're not wasting your slot. Or sometimes you might want to get the equipment that gives you a free slot when you run out of armor, which in turn will technically give you 3 armor cores for that scenario if the situation arises. I just like working with that too. I like the fact that it makes me have to be conscious of what I'm doing when I actually use armor slots or when I take on hits and want to repair my damage.
There's also a really nifty mechanic if you're not particularly good at these style of games. Usually the game has like a quick save right when you enter an area. And if you die in that area, it'll start you re-entering that area. And it'll do that 3 times before it kicks you back to where you last saved at. And there's a bunch of places to save, so you're not losing like a shit ton of progress unless you've decided to be a dipshit and not save. So that's really nice because it gives you 3 of them between every save. So if you keep getting stuck in an area like a boss fight or something, you can keep going into it and you don't lose anything until you've died for the 3rd time and anything you collected between the save point and getting to that boss is gone. And usually that's like 2 screens away, so you can get back there pretty quickly. And that's I really appreciated that because I can't count on the amount of times I've had to actually use that mechanic.
In other words, it respects your time.
Yeah, very much so.
Very good. Well, you two ready to talk about price on this one?
Sure.
Sure.
$20. What do y'all think?
I'll let you go first.
Okie dokie. I honestly find it to be a buy it recommendation on that front. It's a lot of fun. The modifications for the weapons are, even if you don't find yourself switching through weapon equipments and modifiers willy-nilly, this is still an element to games of this nature that is not particularly common as far as I'm concerned. So it feels fresh and it feels kind of refreshing in that regard. So I recommend it for that, if that alone. But also exploring the maps are fun.
You play
and
as
the boss battles are great.
You play as a cute girl and you kill things. Of course I'm for it. 100%. Everyone should play this.
Jeez. All right, works for me. Next up, the Tagalong Obsession, developed by Lulu Do Tech and East Asia Soft, published by East Asia Soft. Released May 6th as Xbox Play Anywhere and PS5 for $24.99. Hui Ting's investigation into a forgotten resort ended in tragedy. She was the sole survivor of a horrifying accident, plagued now by relentless nightmares. A desperate visit to a medium reveals a terrifying truth. She's haunted by a vengeful spirit, and the curse that took her colleagues is still tightening its grip on her life. Aki, what is the Tagalong Obsession?
Okay, so you play as Miss Ting, and you are going back with a Taoist mystic lady to this very, very haunted hotel. And originally you were apparently a reporter that went there and everyone died there except for you. Everyone just apparently for no reason whatsoever hung themselves
Oh, cute.
Because, yeah, exactly. And you were there catatonic and bleeding out from, I don't know. So you go back there because for some reason you are tied to that place and you need to go back there, so says the Mystic Lady, in order to break free of this place and permanently be safe from it. So you head back there, and of course, immediately you and the old lady get separated, because why not? She's the mystic, she is built for a place like this, and you're just some putsy lady. So of course you're getting separated. And for this, she ends up being like, hey, you have a little slightly mystical lamp over there. You can use it, it requires oil, and it goes through it real quick, so you're going to have to find oil around. And, oh yeah, I've also has some instructions on how to make some basic charms over in the room that you're in, so you can go ahead and start making those. You'll have to find stuff to make them with around the building, but I'm sure you can do it. Why wouldn't this, you know, building that's been abandoned for like 20 years not be chock full of stuff to make special mystic talismans? That would be crazy for it not to have that. So you're basically going around creating these talismans that are single-use items. Some of them heal you, some of them allow you to like shoot fireballs at an enemy, others allow you to go invisible, so on and so forth. I think there's like 7 different types. I try not to use them because there's achievements for using like less than 30 of them in total through the playthrough, and I was like, I want to get that, because these don't make a lot of sense to me, because I'm stupid. Yay! So immediately after exiting that room where that stuff is, ghosts start appearing, and they're not the like, ooh, I'm spooky, you can see me, woo. No, they're the kind that are like, oh, I see you, I'm going to go rip your throat out now. So yay, they're the fun kind. So you have to run around and try to avoid being caught by them, because if they catch you, they do a lot of damage to you, and you have to actually break free, which ends up being like a tap this button really quick minigame that no one particularly likes to do. So to get away from these enemies, you jump into hiding spots, which are typically like lockers that you just open up and step into, and even if the ghost is like 2 steps behind you, the moment you start that animation, they're like, oh, where'd you go? Which is great. I love incompetent AI. It's amazing. So while you're doing that, you have to go around the environment, picking up, obviously, the items around that you can find to help you make new charms. But there's also items around the game that are collectibles. They can be prayer beads, friendship bracelets, bottles of, I assume, alcohol. There are all sorts of weird little things, and when you collect them, they actually give your character a bonus to different things. I think all of them are probably related to the different charm talismans that you can make, but I'm not entirely sure because I've only collected like 10 of them. And other than that, there's also collectibles of different memos that you can find around the building from people who used to live there and the like, that give you just a little bit extra story. Sometimes they give you passwords and passcodes, pass numbers, whatever, so you can get doors open, things like that. And you're trying to find different pieces of things so you can get through new doors. Like, one of the first puzzles is this elevator is missing all the buttons for it, so you have to go around, find a button. When you find it, you get back to the elevator, you put it in, and then you go to that floor, and then you just keep doing that. And then later on, eventually, new ghosts start showing up. You get a couple boss fights, which mostly require you to walk around, collect items, and get to places where you push a button, and it lights up, and it's like, ooh, you brought the item here, thank you. Now go collect the next item, stupid, and just constantly doing that until the boss is defeated. There are also some bosses that are basically playing keep away. You're just running away from them, trying to find things that you need so that suddenly they just poof out of existence, which is nice. Yeah, that's a majority of what you're really doing. All the puzzles in this game are like, oh, go find pieces of this to place them in, like, here's a diagram you need to make. Well, go find all the pieces and place them on here and it makes it. Or here's this tore up photo. Find the pieces and put them into the frame correctly. Like, they're very simple puzzles, but all of them are very much like that. And yeah, this isn't a super, super long game. You're looking at probably 8 to 10 hours on your first playthrough. If you really know what you're doing, you can probably get it done in 3 or 4. I was unlucky because I couldn't figure out how to save the game. Because the game tells you how you make save, you activate the save room, and then you're allowed to save there, but the room's only activated for a short period of time, and it didn't tell you how to activate it. So I was just moving around, just trying to get through what I could. And I was hoping that it had an autosave. There's a reason why the word is hoping. And
survival horror games, when you gotta save the game, you gotta save the game.
Yeah. So it would be nice if it kind of explained that a little better. But it turns out, because I watched a video on it later on, just to be like, how the fuck do I actually save? Because I don't want to keep doing this over and over and only getting, like, through the first good chunk of, you know, the game. You actually just walk up to the thing. It's not activated. You walk up to it. You have to be right next to it and at a certain distance. Because if you get too close, it won't activate. If you're too far away, it won't activate. You have to be the right distance, and then you can push a button and it activates.
That's beautiful.
I felt so... Yeah, I felt so fucking stupid. All that, I was like... Oh, you just walk up to it. Okay. Because it talks about how you have to activate the incense and stuff. So I was like, so I have to find incense or something? I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do here. And I'd walk up to it and it wouldn't have anything. So I was like, okay, apparently I don't have what I need. But then I kept not finding anything. I was like, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. No, I was just too close to the fucking thing. I had to back up probably like 2 or 3 steps. Oh, I felt so stupid.
Why didn't you look it up a few hours prior to when you did?
Because that would have been smart, realistically speaking. That would have been really smart to look that up. Yeah. And yeah, it's me. I didn't think about it until well after the point.
$24.99, your thoughts.
This is actually pretty good. I like the keep away that you have to play with the ghosts, so I think it's worth it. This is a pretty nice little game, and again, you're spending probably 8-10 hours your first playthrough. I think it's worth the price.
All right, sounds good. Let's move on to Goblin Vike, the Thief Tycoon, developed and published by Art Thieves, released April 30th on Steam for $14.99. At night, you're a thief sneaking into dungeons to steal goods. By day, you're a cunning merchant, haggle to sell at high prices, master the art of stealth, steal the demon lord's hidden treasures, recruit employees, expand your business, grow from a penniless goblin to a black market tycoon. Pernell, what is going on in Goblin Vike, the Thief Tycoon?
I keep wanting to call it Goblin Vikes like Skies of Arcadia, but it's Goblin Vike. Premise of this game is that you play as a young goblin whose father was a merchant, but unfortunately this merchant father wanted to run an honest business, and that business went into deep debt. And in the process of attempting to get out of debt and run his business, he literally works himself to death, thereby leaving his business to his son's name. Son, upon taking on this business, immediately comes in contact with a bank, the man who ran the loan that his father was working himself tirelessly to pay off, immediately comes under the thumb of this jerkbag, and it has to go on the process of trying to revitalize the store. However, through a turn of quick and effective events, he is met with the Mask of Greed, a sentient mask that tells him that his father died by being honest. And to run an honest shop is a fool's errand, and he needs to get down with his goblin ancestors' antics and steal to provide for his store. And that is what triggers the onset of this game. during the day, you are running. And see, now I want to start with that because it makes more sense to go afterwards. At night, you don the mask of greed and you go into a dungeon that is not random, thankfully. As you progress through it, you go deeper and deeper down. But as you're progressing, you're exploring the dungeon, meeting with NPCs, and engaging with traps and danger. However, the word fighting never came across my lips because you are an individual who is not skilled at fighting. Again, you are just a nimble goblin. However, thanks to the help of the Get Mask of Greed and also just by being a nimble goblin, you are capable of picking the pockets of monsters that are lurking the dungeons and finding items littered throughout, including from dead adventurers, and taking them up to sell in your store. So let's say, for example, there's a monster looking away from you and you tiptoe up behind him by using the sneak ability. You then get up to him, press the steal button, and then you have a short amount of time to input a series of commands to initiate the theft action and then to also loot his pocket. So you don't get time to sit there and peruse the wares in his pocket and decide what you want. Oh, no, you have to just take everything and figure out the rest later, because if you sit there dawdling, clearly this monster is going to realize that something's rifling through his pockets and is not happy to see him, at which point, you know, he will give chase and try to murder you. Again, sometimes you might find yourself in a situation where you might better take the dungeon's traps and use them to advantage to assail a would-be killer, and which is something that I genuinely find very fun to do in this game. But like I said earlier, you'll also have to go through the typical gated scenarios where you might have to find a key to unlock a door or engage with certain NPCs to result in an effect that will get you further in this dungeon. But as you explore the dungeon, your pack's going to fill up, or your life might be in danger and you might come close to dying. At this point, you want to get the hell out of Dodge. And fortunately for you, there are golden statues littered throughout the dungeon that are meant to worship the god that, you know, the dungeon was built to worship. And you can use those in any time to escape the dungeon or to teleport between them if you want to get around and explore earlier or further parts of the dungeon that you've been to. At this point, you will progress towards the day period of the job, at which point you will be using the ill-gotten gains you've acquired. Oh, let's be fair, they're not ill-gotten. You robbed monsters that were trying to kill you in a dungeon. As far as I'm concerned, that's up for grabs. But
fair game.
Now you're up. That's right. It's fair game. So now you take those items you've acquired, and now you want to sell them in your store. And the way that works is that by day, customers will come into the store, and they will ask for specific types of items. You then have the ability to, if you have them anyway, stock their inventory. So you might have a character that has a 2x4 grid, and items can represent a number of different squares in a grid to fill it. You might say this guy wants swords. A sword is a 1x4 item, and you can store 2 swords in his inventory should you choose to sell 2 that you have. You do so, and then the game will show you the ability to either A, sell them for the price he's telling you he wants them for, or you can do an event called bragging. Bragging being the ability to, you know, showboat and say that your wares are better than they actually are to get, you know, haggle a better price. At this point, the game will issue a die roll. Die is a D6, and you're trying to get a total number that represents within a range. So let's say, for example, between 7 and 9 is a good thing. So you roll a die. The die is a 3. Now you need to get something. You basically need to get a 4, either 4 or between 4 and 6 to wrap this up. And if you don't, well, if it's under the 4, so you're still under 7, you can still try again. But if you go over, the deal goes bust, the guy offers you 60% of the total value of the items. You can either take it or leave it. And you don't have all day to do this because you have a limited number of customers coming through, so you got to be careful about whether or not you want to haggle like this or not. You do acquire a build as you play through the game that will allow you to invoke focus, that will allow you to use different types of abilities to modify or affect the results, such as predicting rolls or reusing old rules, and they all use a certain number of focus points from your limited pool, which will increase as you play through the game, and it is in your best interest to use those things sparingly. Now, let's say, for example, you did do this die roll, and you got the proper number, and now you get like a one point four, you sell the value, the items for 1.4 times their value. You can do that, or you can push and go even harder, at which point you sell them even more stuff of the category, so long as you have. Or the categories are interesting, so long as you have the goods to do it. And then you can do it again, just like before, but your focus points don't recharge, And the number you need to stop on is more tight. It's tighter, not more tight. It's tighter. So whereas before it was between 7 and 9, now it's 14 or 15, or just 15. Got to get the exact number. And there's no going back. Once you start on the brag train, you have to succeed. Unless you get in a bid, unless you back out of a deal, you're locked in. So there's a certain level of pressure, luck, fun that comes with that ability. Not to mention the fact that as you explore the dungeon and help people or loot items, you'll also come across items you can put on display in the store that will modify certain perks, like give you bonuses for selling types of items or whatever, or maybe add to like focus point gain, all kinds of different things that might change the way you decide to barter with your items. In addition to everything that I mentioned before, you also gain the ability to spend the money you earn to upgrade your character in different skill trees so he can grow as a better thief running through the dungeon. But you don't want to go nuts on spending your money on that or expanding your store inventory, because you still have to pay the bank at the end of every shop week. And if you don't make them cut, well, then you don't want to find out what happens if you don't make the cut. But be frugal, yet also be a little greedy, because if you go too frugal, you will never be able to really expand on your character skill set, which will allow you to traverse for deeper in the dungeon. Because there is a lot to earn in this. For example, something I didn't mention earlier when I talked about describing the divisions of the dungeon is you'll come across these things on the ground called coin beetles. And on the onset, you can throw a coin beetle to make a sound, which will then distract someone and make them turn around. You know, a good opportunity to kind of walk up behind them, hide in the bush, and then loot their pocket when they come back. But over time, you'll gain abilities to make the coin beetles do different things, like create smoke bombs or make loud noises. Stuff like that to make, you know, give you more tools in your kit to explore and get around. So spend reasonably. I will say that initially when this review came up, graphically, it didn't quite appeal to me in the imagery, aside from the character portraits. But in execution, the game looks pretty nice. It's got a nice retro vibe to it. And the game itself also runs on quite the fun loop. For folks who were fans of games like Moonlighter back in the day, that had a similar explore dungeons and then sell items at the store back during the day, this will be right at home for you. It's another game of that ilk, but it does it differently because you're not an adventurer, you're a thief. And the way you engage the world to get your merchandise is very different, but fun and satisfying. First time you get a guy to chase you around and get shot by an arrow that kills him, and then you go back to loot his corpse, you'll be hooked. I can promise you that. All in all, this game came out of left field, surprised the crap out of me, and now I feel that I'm comfortable in recommending it to people who might want to play it in the future. Don't let this game become a sleeper, nothing.
Very good. It is $14.99. Give us your official verdict.
It's a buy for me.
I'm looking on their Steam page. They have one review from Cartoons, someone with 4 million subscribers, that says, "It has fun game loop. I was kind of addicted. I'm not going to lie." We could do better. Purnell, give us a quote, a review quote.
Kind of put me on the spot. Buy this shit. It's a goblin, for Christ's sakes. And he steals shit. What's not to like? Also,
one.
I had so much fun, I shit myself.
God, I hope they use that. Next up.
Oh, we'll see.
I shit myself. Purnell Vaughn, the SML podcast.
I had so much fun, I shit myself.
Beautiful. All right, next up, Froggy Hates Snow, developed by Crying Brick, published by Digital Bandidos. It released May 7th on Series X and S and PC for $14.99. You are Froggy, a determined survivor in a hostile snowy desert. Dig paths through the snow to discover treasure, battle eerie creatures, and adapt in a world where warmth is survival and the freezing temperatures aren't the only thing that can kill. Stay out too long and you'll freeze unless you've upgraded your abilities to withstand it. Aki, what is going on in Froggy Hates Snow?
Okay, in this, you play as Froggy and you pick a level to go into. You also get to choose what difficulty it's on and what type of map it ends up becoming. There's the standard one where you have to fight against enemies, deal with the cold, all that fun stuff. It's all timed between enemy waves, and you have to hopefully get strong enough to beat all the enemies all the way up through wave 10. Once you've beaten it, I assume you get sent back. I never actually managed to finish one of these because the last boss always would kill me. So, yay. And then once you get kicked back, you get to keep some of the stuff that you've unlocked. You hopefully will have unlocked some other stuff. In the level, while when you're not dealing with enemies, you're going around this area that's completely covered in snow, trying to find coins and various colored gemstones, chests that you can unlock if you've found a key. You also have to find the chest itself, so good fun. From these chests and from when you defeat a wave of enemies, you get an upgrade point that allows you to freely upgrade one of a handful of things. It just chooses, hey, here's three options, choose one, stupid, and you just have to. Otherwise, you're bringing all these coins and different crystals and stuff back to a little bubble of heat that you have to routinely go back to just because it is freezing cold out there and your froggy's a frog and doesn't like the cold. So
I hear it doesn't like snow either.
No, it does not. So you bring stuff there and it all gets stored because you have a limited inventory that you can also increase, and I suggest doing that immediately. And you can use that storage to start upgrading things as well. Everything obviously costs more. Every time you upgrade, it starts costing different resources as well. And there's only so much in the level, so eventually you're going to run out of stuff. You can't like max everything. Also, while you're doing all this stuff, you occasionally find items and you're like given three options of what item you want. Sometimes it is a full-on upgrade to something you already have. Sometimes it's a new item that you can give yourself. Like, regularly, thank God, I tend to find a shovel that you can use. So you can dig through the snow with a shovel, which gives you a larger radius of stuff that you're moving out of the way. And it tends to be a little faster. Yay! Otherwise, you're using your hands like a dingus. You can also find gloves for your hands that allow you to dig a little faster, and they keep you warm a little longer. Things like that. Each one of these is a different upgrade from all your other ones. So if you get the shovel and you're upgrading its ability to dig, there is no longer a reason for you to start upgrading your normal ability to dig, because you're using the shovel now. Any points you put into that other digging is now not useful. Yay! That's always what I wanted to hear. And as you upgrade these things, there are other abilities that you can unlock, as well as new characters you can unlock. And some of them are behind, like, oh, for instance, upgrade the shovel to level 4, which is its max rank, or whatever its max rank is, whatever. And it might unlock this other ability. You also have to find blue crystals, which are the only crystal that keeps with you in between rounds, and you use that to buy these new upgrades or characters. So every character has its own abilities, as well as its own bonuses and detractions. So it's not like, oh, Froggy is good, but every other character is one step better, and then the next one's one step better. No, they're all about base level. It's just, do you use the specific thing? If not, then it doesn't matter if it's in a negative stat anymore. So just that ends up being better for you, because the stat that's it's negative, you don't care about. So that's what you end up needing to worry about. There ends up being, I think, either 8 or 10 different characters. I can't remember exactly. I've unlocked 0 of them so far. I'm close to unlocking one of them. And it's the same for unlocking new abilities, like the shovel, for instance. There's like 30 or something of those that you can unlock. I have the ability to unlock like 8 of them. I'm just choosing not to, because you can only block like one of the items from showing up. And it's like, I don't want to start putting in a bunch of stuff that, from how I play the game, isn't going to be useful for me. So I'm kind of just not opening those yet, because you have to do the prerequisites so you can unlock them, and then you have to pay with the blue crystals to unlock them. So I meet the prerequisites, but I'm like, that ability just that's not something I'm going to use, and I don't want that showing up and maybe replacing something that I actually do use and want to appear more often. Because I only get one thing that I can be like, this isn't going to show up. I already have like 12 things that might show up, and it's like, I'm only going to get like 3, maybe 4 of them if I'm really lucky. That means I have a 1/3 chance of getting the perfect thing that I want. That's not good enough. So I've not really opened any of those just because I don't want to. But there's an option between choosing to do the fighting thing, and there's also a more relaxed mode. I don't remember the names of these. I'm sorry. And it basically gets rid of all the fighting. You are still collecting everything, both of them. It doesn't matter what difficulty you're playing on. It doesn't matter which one of the two modes you're playing in. They unlock the same kind of stuff. So in the more relaxed mode, you're not fighting enemies. Instead, it gives you 3 things that you need to do. One of them is clearing basically all of the snow from the map to give you some extra pointage. One is for opening a special treasure chest that's hard to find, but you will definitely find if you're getting rid of all the snow, because it's somewhere in there. And then the third one, I don't remember what it is. I think it's picking up a certain amount of gold, which again, you're going to probably do since you're removing all the snow from the map. Getting all 100% of that done unlocks a certain ability that you can get equipped to your character. But if you're playing in the one where you fight, 2 of those are the same, but the 3rd one is just beating all 10 waves. You still get the same item, though. So you can play either way, whichever one you prefer, because, you know, some people just aren't going to be as good as the combat, like myself. The last boss constantly kills me. It kind of gets really irritating when I'm like, I just want the damn ability, please, now and thank you. So I went over to the relaxed mode and was like, oh, I just get to uncover everything. That's nice. You still can't die in that mode, though. So don't be like, oh, I can't die anymore because there's no enemies. No, if you stay out in the cold, you lose heat. And once you lose all your heat, it starts taking away your health. Your ass will die still, even on relaxed mode. So keep near your heat sources, or else you're doomed like a dumb shit. Not that that's happened to me, thank God. It's almost happened, but it hasn't happened because I'm smart enough to not get caught by that by accident totally. And yeah, that's really all you're doing, because in order to open up new levels, you also have to finish the prior level and do certain things. Everything about this game is getting a certain amount of things done so you can unlock something new for everything. Levels, characters, and abilities, they all require prerequisites being done in order to unlock new shit. So you're going to be playing the first level a few times to hopefully unlock the second level, and it's going to keep doing that. So that's something you need to keep in mind. But yeah, that's really all there is to the game. It's a pretty simple game, but kind of hard to master.
All right, well, it's $14.99. What do you think?
Pretty okay with this game. I think it's totally worth buying. It's a nice, cute little game, and I think it's easily worth that money, yeah.
Very cool. And if you are on the fence, the fine folks at Digital Banditos gave us some extra copies to give away, and we'll be doing that in the upcoming weeks on the show. So stick around. Oh, yeah. And one of these episodes, we'll be doing that one.
Y'all definitely want that. It's a good game. Seriously.
Good stuff. All right, next up, Little Things, developed and published by Dolores Interactive. It released May 8th, Xbox Play Anywhere, Switch, PS4, PS5 for $9.99. Plays a small creature named Weiss on a journey to find the love of his life, Kiss, who has been lost deep within the dungeons. Harness the power of colors to solve puzzles, unlock new abilities, and platform your way to freedom. Jump, dash, and even manipulate gravity itself to overcome every obstacle. Purnell, what are the little things in life?
Cheap games.
Yeah. This is one of them. So tell us about it.
So in Little Things, well, you already described that part. This game runs takes place over a series of single screen platforming challenges where you need to reach the exit door or zone and get the hell out. So what does that entail exactly? Well, in a base form, the simplest form, it's walking and jumping across platforms, walking through the door, preferably within the time limit so that you can get the 3-star bonus. Yeah, you thought I wasn't going to get a review episode without one of those kinds of games.
Oh, no.
Wrong. But you're trying to beat the end game time, the best end game time to get 3 stars versus a 2 or a 1. But the thing that makes this game stick out more so and define definitive of its title, well, let me take that back. No, the title is because you're a little and you're dealing with things. But the thing that makes it special or stand out is that there are color powers associated with this game as well. Every once in a while exploring a level, you might come across a little pool of, I guess it looks like a hot spring from Kid Icarus. And then when you walk, it's of a different color. When you step in that hot spring, you will change to the color that's associated with the spring. So let's just call it a pot of paint. And depending on the color you turn into, you'll get a specific ability that you'll use to get around. Simple things ranging from double jumps up to like lifting blocks and such. Nothing that's crazy or out of the ordinary, but still the fact that you can't do all of those abilities without the particular paint colors makes you divide up the tasks required for a level. So on the simplest terms, you might be seeing a door. Door is just out of reach, but there's also a block down the way that can be picked up and moved, but you have to be pink to do this. So you'll go get the pink color, then you'll go pick up the pink block, drop it down, and then you can hop up to the door. But wait, there's also a gap after the ledge that you jump up to that requires a dash. Well, make sure you go get that green paint color change, but only after you've done the pink color change and move the block. And then you do the one, then you do the other, hop across the dash, and then boom, you're out the level. And basically, levels generally work around like that too. But there's also, you know, the typical things, conveyor belts, spikes, levers, plungers. You know, it's in there as a traditional standard of platforming. And what I think is particularly interesting about this game is that the times can be pretty devious. And that is because the time, sometime to get the best time on a level, requires you to do something you otherwise would not think you'd even be able to do either in the level with the ability, because the level design to make you think, oh, the solution is to do these 3 things and get out. But then you beat the level in 22 seconds and the clear time is 15. Okay, maybe I'll do it a little faster this time. 22 seconds, level's clear is 15. Come to find out, if you understand how the powers and abilities work, you can jump and just skip half the stage. In some cases, you can skip the entire stage. It's just knowing and understanding what your character is actually capable of doing and using that to beat levels. So the game isn't going to punish you, obviously, if you don't do the best you can possibly do. You can beat a level with 2 stars, 1 star. But if you're like me, you're not moving on until that thing says 3. So it'll be a little interesting as you sit there and beat your head and was like, what the hell am I supposed to do? Oh, crap. Who would have thought?
For the people who are scared, the Xbox achievements do not require stars. They just require you to beat the levels.
I could have sworn some of them did. Like, there would be one where it's like, I take it back. No, maybe so, because if there's that number of levels in the entire game, just beating the level would probably get you that many stars. So that makes sense. God, but I'm positive I got achievements that specifically said you earned X number of stars. So, but that would explain it if there's as many as there are stages. So, with that said, still got to beat the levels, though. Haha, minimum of at least 50 stages, I think, if I get that right, to get the achievements for star counts. But there's probably even more. Anyway, I think the thing that's most important about this game is that it's a lot of fun. The one thing I kind of regret about it, though, is the fact that there is a world map that you can traverse. There's also the ability to kind of just click between levels and choose the one you want. But unless I'm missing something, there are no, like, say, secret exits or hidden levels, which usually is the sort of thing you'd expect to hope for when you see the ability to traverse a world map, going from node to node.
Instead of stars, are they hearts that you get at the end of the level?
Yes, it's hearts. It's hearts.
All right. Then, yeah, you got to collect hearts.
Yes.
Your first 3 hearts, 50, 100, and 200.
Yep. So,
basically, threw me off by saying stars.
It's just the nature of the business, man. It's always three stars. I mean, it's three MacGuffins. But like I said, it's like, I know for a fact you definitely have to get a certain number of them. It's just a question of how quickly will you do it. And if you're getting three stars on every level, it adds up. But with that said, I mean, I think the game is still a lot of fun. Even the music is nice. It has its own weird way of how it kicks in. Like, I don't even think it so much as has, like, the music isn't devoted to each level. It's just kind of a track that will boot up when you enter a stage, and it can change depending on when you enter the level. But I like the music. It's satisfying. So I'm not even knocking that. It's just, if you go looking for music online, if this ever ends up online, it's going to be like track one, track two, because it's not world-based. It's not level-based. But that's fine. I'm not going to ramble so much more about this game. It's pretty sweet. I'm sweet and short. But ultimately, I think it's worth the purchase. And no, I'll give it a no. Do your thing.
$10 verdict.
I was gonna say I could even see this being a fuck it, why not? But then you said $10, but so nah. I think it's at least a buy it though. You'll get a fair number of levels beaten. You'll get a fair bit of play out of a $10 game in this case. So nothing that's gonna break your brain, except for if you're trying to get some of those super times. But otherwise, just fun.
Very good. And there's over 80 levels in the game, so it's even more.
A lot. 80.
Final game to talk about tonight is Saccharine Echo, developed by Neverlist, published by Zetalon, released May 15th as an Xbox Play Anywhere title for $4.99. That's right, Zetalon's doing Play Anywhere. Thank you, Zetalon, we love you. Scotland, 2020, Alice is a young woman struggling through a painful breakup. Hoping to distract herself with online shopping, she buys a vintage mirror. Then whispers begin to echo through her flat. Soon she discovers that a mysterious figure's trapped inside the mirror, and only she can help them break free by forming a deeper connection. Aki, what is Saccharine Echo?
Okay, this is a Choice Matters visual novel. It doesn't have a ton of choices, and it's not super long, so it's good for people like Scotty, who are too lazy to read and just zips right through everything. So in this, you play as a young woman, and she and her girlfriend recently broke up because her girlfriend wanted to move to Sweden, and that was just too long of a distance for them. You have to remember, these people are in Europe. Anything above like a 5-minute jog is way too far for them. So they broke up, and she's been super depressed about it. And she's been going to meetings with other depressed people who have what she considers to be significantly more serious problems than she has. And she also gets a mirror that she bought online. And in that mirror is something. Don't know what it is, but it's definitely a something. It's a very pale individual with very permanent makeup, apparently. Don't know what gender it is. Don't know what species it is. You know, it's just a something. It is something. And it immediately starts hitting on you. And doesn't want you to leave it alone. Because it's like, you, something about you will get me out of here. I don't know what it is. But I would like to be out of the mirror. Because I don't remember a time when I wasn't in the mirror. And this is some bullshit. Please and thank you. So you end up talking a lot with this individual, and they know more about you than realistically they should, being someone who is trapped in a fucking mirror. And yeah, it's basically just you making choices on how to deal with talking with your sister via text message, talking with the group that you meet with to talk about your depression, and your interactions with this feisty something in the mirror. It does have two different endings. You can complete them in a couple hours for your first run, maybe 3-4 max, and then your second playthrough, because you've read almost all of it, you just skip until you hit the choices, make the choice, read the handful of dialogue bits that are different, and then start skipping to the next choice. They does provide two very different endings. And yeah, it's a nice quick one. That's all I really have to say about it, because otherwise I'd be giving away the story.
All right, $5. What do you think?
It's a fuck it, why not, for sure. It's cheap enough, might as well buy it. It's not bad. And as Scotty just said, it's an easy 1K, ha ha! You didn't read it, did you, you putts? But yes, it's a short few hour one. It is an easy 1K. Almost every achievement in it is just for the story, and then there's one for each ending. And of course, Scotty states he didn't read it. Of course he didn't. I hate you, Scotty, so much.
You're going to hate me so much more when you see the image for the episode.
Oh God, no. Oh no, who did you bastardize with Jacob's face? Oh no.
Now you'll see. You'll see.
No, I'm horrified, because no matter which character you chose, it's going to give me fucking nightmares. it's worth buying, and it's cheap enough, you might as well get it.
Very good. And with that, we are done with this episode. Big thanks to you two for being here until the end. Big thanks to Chris, Horak, Light, and Jacob for coming on, doing their thing. Does anyone have any final words to wrap up this show? Because I have a headache and I want to go take a nap.
Don't abuse aspirin, but just because you can't abuse it doesn't mean it's not worth using when you need it. Go to bed.